So the major controversy is, what is the status of baby wipes on Shabbos? And there's a lot of discussion in the contemporary poskim about it, a lot of discussion in many of the contemporary svarim about this. And I have always appreciated the approach that Rav Asher Weiss has taken in his tshuvas, and it's not just one tshuva that he has, it's in numerous tshuvas that he discusses this issue. In a subsequent volume, he talks about it again because he got pushback about the tshuvas that he wrote in the earlier volume, and he decided he needed to defend himself. And that's really what I wanted to go through this evening, not only because it's interesting how he tackles the issue, but also because I think two of the points that are brought up here are extremely interesting in general to other nos'im b'halacha as well. So let's begin with what he writes in Chelek Aleph. This is, if you look up in the original Chelek Aleph Simen Yud Dalet, it's the number of pages long, this tshuva, and I really just extracted the most important critical aspects of the tshuva just for our interest this evening. So he writes as following, the Shailas Rabbi, many people have asked, the Mutter Lehishtamish B'Shabbos B'Magvonim Lachim, are we allowed to use baby wipes that are moist on Shabbos? V'Ikar HaShaila, the real crux of the issue is, number one, Im Yesh Bazes Schita. So here he lays out the issue for us, and he says, number one, would it be considered a prohibition of Schita? You're not allowed to squeeze liquid that is absorbed into a fabric, as we've been discussing the last couple of weeks. So that's question number one. Number two, Im Achein Yesh Bazeh Chashash Schita, if you assume that baby wipes are absorbent and therefore there is a concern about squeezing out the liquid that is absorbed inside of the fabric, Yesh La'ayin Im Habe Davar Hamaschavin. Question number two is, did I have any intent to squeeze it out? Normally we assume that the only way you can violate a malacha is if I had intent to violate the malacha, but here, when I'm trying to wipe off the child, I have no intent at all to squeeze out. However, as we learned in previous shiurim, we know that even if I don't have intent for something, but if it is a psikresha, that's what the Gemara describes, just to remind ourselves very quickly. The Gemara says back in the days of Chazal, they didn't have so many children's toys. So one of the toys that children used to enjoy playing with was the head of a chicken. Now, how do you play with the head of a chicken without having the rest of the chicken? The answer is they used to cut off the head of the chicken. They used to throw it around and play with it. So that's very nice if before Shabbos, they prepared a head of a chicken, and now the kids have it available for them to play with. However, what happens if on Shabbos itself, the kids, Shabbos afternoon, long Shabbos afternoon, like in the summer months, and now there is no head of a chicken available. So what are the kids going to do all day? One kid wakes up and he says, I have a great idea. Why don't we go take one of the chickens from the coop, and we'll cut off its head, and then we'll have something to play with. Lovely idea. What's the problem? Problem is it's going to die. And you're not allowed, Netilas Neshama, you're not allowed to kill an animal on Shabbos. Certainly you're not allowed to do that. So the kid responds and says, what do you mean? I have no interest in cutting off the head. I have no interest in killing the animal. All I want is the head. Yeah, well, obviously, when you try to get the head off of an animal, the animal is no longer going to be alive. So that's what the Gemara coins the term, psik resha v'lo yamas. Do you think you could cut off the head of a chicken without the chicken dying? Obviously, even though it's not my intent, I don't want to kill the animal, I don't want to end its life, in the end of the day, the only way to get the result that I want is by killing him. And therefore, even if it's a davar she'eino mischaven, even if it's something that I don't intend to do, but if inadvertently this is certainly what's going to happen as I do this activity, then I would not be allowed to do it on Shabbos. So that's the question here. Number one, would it be considered schita, meaning are these considered absorbent material that when I use them, they are going to squeeze out the liquid that is absorbed inside? Question number one. Question number two, even if they are absorbent material, we have an assumption that this is not what I want to do. I don't want to squeeze it out. Do we assume that every time I use a baby wipe, I'm going to squeeze out the material from the absorbed water or liquid that is inside? So let's do the first paragraph. Hinei b'shmir Shabbos kilchasa, kasa b'shem hagonim shlom azaman arabach lahakal bazeh. The Shmir Shabbos kilchasa was written by Reb Neuver. Reb Neuver was a great Talmud Chacham, lived in Beit Vegan, and he was a very loyal student, very loyal Talmud of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, whose yeshiva was in Beit Vegan, right? The yeshiva Kol Torah was in Beit Vegan, and Reb Neuver lived right down the block, and he was a very, very loyal Talmud. Why is it that Reb Neuver wrote the Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa? Anybody know? Reb Neuver was a survivor of the Holocaust, and I think he was hid away in some basement somewhere, and the only Sefer that they had there was Masechah Shabbos. And that's what he learned throughout the duration of his time surviving the Holocaust. And he made a promise to himself and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that if he survives, he is going to write the most authoritative Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, because the Masechah Shabbos is what saved him from the Holocaust. And that's what he did. He spent his entire life investing in the Sefer Shmirah Shabbos Kilchasa, which really was not only the staple of the laws of Shabbos, that really was a groundbreaking Sefer, but it was groundbreaking not only because it had the laws of Shabbos, it was groundbreaking also because this was the first Sefer of its kind, where you had the halacha on the top and the footnotes on the bottom. So now we see many, many Svarim that take a copy of what he did. They replicate what he tried to do. But in his time, there was no such Sefer like that. He was the first one who came up with such an idea. So this was a very important Sefer. And there, the Shmirah Shabbos Kilchasa, if I'm not mistaken, I think Reb Neuwirth said that every psak that he quoted from Reb Shlomo Zalman was read by Reb Shlomo Zalman and was okayed by Reb Shlomo Zalman to have written in the Sefer. So it's a very, very reliable source. And there he writes in the name of Reb Shlomo Zalman, when he asked him about baby wipes on Shabbos, he writes that Reb Shlomo Zalman said it is mutter. V'taymo v'nimuko. What was the reason for Reb Shlomo Zalman allowing this? Dehavi kaha deyuma ein chesam et aleph. Because the Gemara says in Maseches Yuma, and this is quoted the halacha in the Mishneh Berurah Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, mutter lekaneach yada v'raglav erev Yom HaKippurim b'mapa. I'm allowed to wipe my hands and feet with a towel. So let's say I take a shower Erev Yom Kippur. No reason why I shouldn't. Take a shower Erev Yom Kippur l'kavod Yom Tiv. When I get out of the shower, the towel is going to be moist. So then the Shulchan Aruch says, if it's still moist the next day, I'm allowed to use that towel and I'm allowed to wipe my eyes with the same towel that was moist from the day before. It's still moist from the cleaning that I did with the towel yesterday. And in such a case, writes the Gemara, lo chayshinan l'schita. We are not concerned about schita. Why are we not concerned? On Yom Kippur morning, I'm going to take the towel that I used yesterday, that I got all wet from my shower or my bath that I took, l'kavod Yom Tiv, and now I'm going to use it to wipe my eyes on Yom Kippur morning to refresh myself a little bit. How am I allowed to do that? V'kach magvonim elu, says Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, that would be no different than our case of the wipes. Da'af sheyesh bazeh lachus, even though we know that the wipes have some kind of moisture in them, mikal makom lachusam mu'ata, ve'ein bahem schita, there is so little moisture inside of them, that would not be defined as a malachav schita. Va'af shebar she'em agvonim elu sheyesh bahem kamos nikera shal nozlim, domin laha desim and tafrei shud gimel, even though we know this is not the same as a towel that I use on Erev Yom Kippur. Come on. How much moisture is left on a towel that I use for a shower in Erev Yom Kippur? By the time the morning of Yom Kippur comes around, there's almost nothing left in the towel. So he says, obviously we know that there is a distinction. Obviously we know that the wipes have more moisture than the towel has on the next morning. However, he writes, still, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach felt that this would be similar to that case, because after all, there is not so much moisture in the wipe in the first place, and therefore it would not be a problem at all. Go to the next paragraph. Gam b'shevet alevi sham b'sof dvarav kasa. Shuv ha'iru osi od pam delefima shanasim agvonim elu hayom retuvim harbe. Shevet alevi was Rav Vosner, one of the great poskim in Bnei Brak, and he says, look, I've looked at many of these baby wipes, and it seems to me like they are very moist. This is not similar at all to the case of the Shulchan Aruch, which is quoted from the Gemara Maseches Yuma, and therefore he felt, Karav shi efshar lamad be'etzah hanal shelo lidcho karbe. How can you trust a person that they're going to know how to use a wipe properly? If they wipe it too hard, if they wipe a child, let's say a child's face is completely dirty. He ate some kind of applesauce, whatever, now it got crusty all over the face, and now you have to really scrub hard with the baby wipe. So says Rav Vosner, you're going to tell a parent, if you're just wiping the baby lightly, then that's not considered to be schita. If you're going to wipe the baby with a very aggressive wipe, then it's considered to be a malacha. So what, we're going to nitnu dvarecha l'shiurim? What are we going to start doing? Every family is going to determine for themselves, well, how hard am I wiping the baby? How dirty is the child? Are we all going to really remember that? And therefore, he says, he thinks that this would be something that is an irresponsible heter to give. Alkein aleinu lahachmir bekazos. And therefore, he feels that we should be machmir. And along those lines, the Shevet HaLevi says we should be machmir, but the very authoritative Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, the Arches Shabbos, written by Rav Rubin, also agreed to that principle, that we should be machmir, and we should not use baby wipes on Shabbos. Now, this is just the general discussion about baby wipes. So now, let's get down to what his opinion is. Rav Asher Weiss writes, now after I set it up, Rav Shlomo Zalman has quoted in the Shmir Shapska Chassa says, Mutter, other Achronim say it's Aser, let me tell you what I feel. Ma Ese. Again, I'm skipping through a couple of pages of what he writes to get to this point, but here's the bottom line. Yeah? That's a very important line. So there, he quote, that's really what we're going to get to in the next tshuva. Then he quotes here that Rav Reuben writes in the Arfa Shabbos that he heard from Rav Shlomo Zalman. I skipped it because we're going to get to it in more detail later. Okay, so let's ignore that for a second. But he writes that he spoke to Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, and Rav Shlomo Zalman retracted what he originally had said and written in the Shmir Shabbos Gechasa. Now this gets very complicated. What are you going to say? So now he's written in the Shmir Shabbos Gechasa that it's mutter. Now you say that you spoke to him in a private conversation. He says, it's us, sir. What do we do with that? It's a major problem. So we're going to get back to that in a minute. And that's why I think this is a very fascinating issue that's not only relevant to our case. This is relevant to so many different things that we have in halacha today. I know that this came up a number of times. Because of my work with Camp Simcha, I developed a very close relationship with Rabbi Elimelech Bluth, who is a major Talmud of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So he learned by Rav Moshe for 30 years, at least 30 years, maybe even longer. And he wrote down everything, and he really was Mishamish Rav Moshe in a very very intimate way. He was very, very close with Rav Moshe, and he wrote down all the psukim that Rav Moshe gave on a day-to-day basis. And as a result of that, there are many things that are found in the Tshuvas of the Yigas Moshe that he says, no, that's not really what Rav Moshe felt, and when you read it, it's not really what he said, and the circumstances were different, and Rav Moshe only said it with this caveat and with that. So what do you do? So it happens to be that I got to know him because of he was very involved in Camp Simcha. They used to ask him shailas, but he never went to camp. So they had him, he was like the posik of Camp Simcha, but Rabbi Feiner and I were both on the campus, so there were shailas that came up all the time, day to day, that we had to call him to discuss, and we sometimes had to make a game time decision without being able to call him because it was minutes or it was Shabbos where we weren't able to make phone calls, and then we would discuss it with him after. And very often, if we would say something in the name of Rav Moshe, which was always a dangerous thing to say to him, because you don't quote Rav Moshe to somebody who knows Rav Moshe 1,000 times better than you'll ever know him. So he said, oh, no, you can't use that heter of Rav Moshe because Rav Moshe meant this, or no, when Rav Moshe says it's us, or he didn't really mean that, I spoke to him privately. So what do you do with that? I once asked Rav Asher Weiss, what do I do? Somebody claims he had private conversations with Rav Moshe that contradict what Rav Moshe writes in his own Igros Moshe. So who should I trust? Should I trust Rav Moshe, or should I trust his Talmidim? It's a major problem. So that's an issue that he's going to get to on the second page here, that really he touches on in the Chelek Beis, because Rav Reuben, the author of the Archa Shabbos, who's a major Talmud Chacham, I'm not making light of him, he's a very serious Talmud Chacham, a very Chashev Rav in Har Nof. I remember when I went to Har Nof for the first time for Shabbos, it was by Rav Nissen Kaplan's house. Rav Nissen Kaplan is one of the Rosh Yeshiva in the Mir, so he had invited me to come to his house for Shabbos. And I went to shul Friday night, and the entire shul, almost the entire shul, it's called Kehilas B'nai Torah. So you hear of a shul, Kehilas B'nai Torah, what do you think? It's a bunch of young guys learning in a kolo, right? Kehilas B'nai Torah, I don't know, that's what I imagined in my mind. So I came to shul. Kehilas B'nai Torah is a whole shul of Rashi yeshivas from all over Yerushalayim who all gather together and join the shul. Now who's going to be daring enough to be the rabbi of that shul? And he is Rabbi Reuben. So Rabbi Reuben gets up to speak Friday night. He doesn't say the drushas we give between Kabbalah Shabbos and Ma'arik. He doesn't say a nice bar in the parsha. He gets up and gives some kind of whopper halacha shir about a major chiddush that he had that week, some crazy shaila that he had, and he goes through it to explain how he arrived at his psak. If I remember correctly, maybe it just felt like a long time, it was 25, 30 minutes. I think in Eretz Yisrael in general, they're not Mekabel Shabbos early. Not only are they not Mekabel Shabbos early, they also wait until the Zman. So it's not only that you don't do Shabbos early, it's that you daven mincha at the Zman, and then you wait until the Zman. I mean, not just waiting until the regular Zman, you're waiting until the Machmir Zman, because you have a whole shul of Machmirim there. So I remember being in his shul, and we waited a very long time as he gave his shir, and it was amazing to me. I've never seen anything like it. Every paragraph that he finished saying, there was another Rosh Hashiva who jumped up and attacked him for what he was saying. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. Amazing. Rizcha d'Araisa. But Rav Reuben is able to hold his own, and he had no problem. He was taking them all on, and it was an amazing sight to behold. So Rav Reuben, not making light of it, he is a major Talmud Chacham, and the question is, what do we do with what he said in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that contradicts what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said? That's a problem. So let's see. We're going to get back to that. So Rav Reuben basically wrote an attack after the Chelek Aleph of Minchas Asher came out, and he has three tshuvas in a row to put forth his position about allowing baby wipes on Shabbos. Rav Reuben wrote a response, as was to be expected, because he called him out by name. And he wrote a response, and he said, you know, I don't agree with your position at all. So in the Chelek Beis of the Minchas Asher, he fires back at Rav Reuben and explains why he thinks that there's no room to say that Rabbi Reuben's position is correct. So that's just an interesting caveat that we're going to get to on the second page. So let's see. My opinion is, if Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach wrote that this is something that's permissible on Shabbos, that means it's permissible on Shabbos. Nochachti ladas te b'shimush mukubal b'migvonim hamatsuyim kayom bashuk. He says, I bought many, many different brands of baby wipes, and I tried them all out. Either on my own skin, or on my grandchildren, whatever it is, I tried them all out. And he says, it came to my attention, after trying all these out, ein schita klal, that this is not considered a malach of schita at all. Ve'ein nikter hevdo klal, bekamos hanozlim hamufureshes mina magvon, it makes no difference if I'm going to wipe the baby softly or if I'm going to aggressively wipe the child. Either way, it's not a problem of schita at all. V'sibas hadavar. Why is it that there's no problem of schita when we talk about baby wipes? Mishum shemagvonim elu miyutzarim be'ofen shehanozel tofeach aleihem ve'eno nivla bahem. He said, it came to my attention that the way that these baby wipes are produced is that they are non-absorbent. We have moisture on top of them, moisture on the bottom of them, but they are non-absorbent material. Ki kol to'elas magvunim Elohi. What is the purpose of these baby wipes? Shekamas mu'ata shel nozlim mufreshes mehem agabi aguf. We want that a very small amount of liquid, of moisture, from the wipe should get onto the body. Umis adam e'alei kach. And it's going to evaporate, thank you, on its own. She'ein sorech b'nigav nosaf la'achar ha'shimash b'hem. Imagine if wipes would be absorbent, and then every time you wipe the child, you would have to then get a towel to wipe off all the wetness that was on the child. If you don't wipe it off, the child is going to get a diaper rash. So what would we do? That would be very annoying. To change a baby's diaper, you have to first clean them, then you have to get a clean towel to clean off the cleaner. That doesn't make sense. So the baby wipes companies have thought of this. They're not so silly. This is what they do for a living. So they've thought of this before, and they decided the way that we're going to go about it is we're going to make baby wipes that are not as absorbent as other materials. And therefore, whenever you take out a wipe from the package, it's never going to have too much moisture on it. Dehalo yadua, she'im mechatlim tinok ba'oder ratuv. If you're going to put a diaper on a child while he or she is still wet, yigrom lo giroi vizihum. You can cause the child to get an infection, to get a diaper rash. So you don't want to do that. Al kain, and therefore, miyutzarim magvonim elu, the people who have produced all of these baby wipes, all these companies, they make them in a way, kach shebli asa mu'ata, they make them in a way where it's very minimally absorbent, v'ikr hanozel tofeach hapneim, and most of the moisture is just on top. Ach ilu hayibolim es hanozel, if the material was absorbent, haysakamas hanozel gedola, you would have a lot of moisture that would come out every time you pulled a wipe out of the package. Vayitzrichim niguv la'achar hashimash b'migvonim. So the companies themselves who make the wipes don't want them to be absorbent because they understand that there's a potential problem if you would do that. So that's his argument. Otis Barley, whenever I read this tshuva, the few times that I did, I'm like imagining that he's taking a tour of the baby wipes company. That's what he writes here. That he went to the Mif'al, and he went to the managers of these companies, and he wanted to know exactly what happens, which is the right way to Paskin Ashayla. You have to know the Metzias. You have to know exactly what it is. Rav Asher Weiss told me many times that he thinks Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was a tremendous posik. A couple of years ago when we were on our... we take a trip every January with eight Rabbanim here in the tri-state area. We all go together to Eretz Yisrael for a week and we learn together. And for some reason, it possessed one of them to ask Rav Asher Weiss when we were there in his house, what was the last contemporary sefer that you bought? Not the last contemporary sefer that you've been given. A lot of people give him svarim because, you know, something comes out. They think he's interested. They don't know he's never going to read it. But they want to know, like, what's the last contemporary sefer that you bought? So he was thinking. He said, I think the last contemporary sefer that I bought with my own money was the Tshuvas Mincha Shlomo. That was Reb Shlomo Zalman's Tshuvas, because he said, that is so fundamental. What's so fundamental about Reb Shlomo Zalman's Tshuvas? It's not just the fact that his Tshuvas are so important for so many modern-day issues. He told us once that he felt the godless of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was that he brought a new phenomenon into the world, and that is, before you paskin a shayla, you have to know the metzias of the shayla that you're paskining. Which to us sounds very simple. But Reb Shlomo Zalman was the one who was mechadish that. That when you talk about electricity, and you try to deal with electricity on Shabbos, you have to first understand, how does electricity work? You have to first understand, how do the appliances actually work? And only then can you give an answer. And you look at the tshuvas from before Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the ones that were written in Europe, there were many gedolim who were philosophizing, who were imagining what many of these kinds of new shilas were all about. And meanwhile, it's clear that they missed the boat. They had no understanding of what the actual issue on the ground is. So over here, this is no different. You want to understand what's the issue when it comes to baby wipes, then take a day off and go down to the factory where they create these and go talk to the people who know the most about the product. And then you can properly address the issue that's at hand. Yeah.
Does it follow that where there is no issue of schita, there can also not be an issue of mefarik?
Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, correct. That's correct. So that's what he writes. He says, his barley ayde bal mif'al yitzer migvonim. He says, I spoke to the producer, the one who runs the factory of this baby wipes company. Shabotkim shahachomer yia bilti sofeg. He told me with certainty that they make this fabric in a way where it is non-absorbent or very minimally absorbent. Kedei shelo yitporer velo yitapeach. He says, another consideration, forget about the fact that the child would get a diaper rash if it was too wet. Outside of that, he says, the baby wipe itself would fall apart. If it became so wet, the minute you took it out, it would just disintegrate. It would fall apart. So that's something that he writes is a reason why he has no concern. After all of my trying to use these wipes, I came to the conclusion. Even if you take a baby wipe and you crush it into your hand, right, and then you squeeze it out, Yesh kan schita gemura, v'kach gam im makaple magvonim elu meshafshvim chazak as guf hatinok yesh chashash schita. If I take 20 baby wipes at a time and I scrub aggressively against a surface, obviously something's going to come out. Mikamakom bein b'shimash b'hem ayide niguv kal bein b'shimash b'hem balachatz mesuyam ki niguv tinok sheheslachlech ein hevdo b'kamas hanozlim hamefurashim ehem v'im kein lo havi psikresha. Yes, it is true that if you do it in a certain way, if I take a bunch in my hand and I squeeze it, something's going to come out. Or if I take a bunch and I scrub it very aggressively against a hard surface, yes, something is going to be emitted from the fabric of the wipe itself. But that's not the norm. You can't say that that's a psikresha. You can't say that every time I use a wipe, that's what happens. So then it reverts back to a davar sheina mischavin. Davar sheina mischavin on Shabbos would be permissible. Okay. So that's his argument, and this is what he writes. Look in the next paragraph. Sorry. Yes, there has to be some kind of shear, but the question is over here, when we're talking about a chashash shema yischot, right? Is a chashash shema yischot, meaning if I would take 20 wipes at a time, that shear would come out. So when we're talking about the chashash derabanan of maybe it's going to lead me to do that, maybe it's even without a shear. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So that's his point. That's his point. If you take 20 together, you are going to get from the disinfectant wipes. But when you're talking about this, you won't. Next paragraph. Ra'isi baruch ha-shabasham shekasa. Shenizbara ayidei bika ma'da'it shal mumchim. He says that they tested it out with experts, and they came to the conclusion, sheyesh ha-shash schita b'mikvonim elu. He says they looked under a microscope, and they had the experts test it out, and they came to the conclusion that when you use a wipe, there is something that is coming out from the absorbed material. Umemela havi psikresha. Hinei kvar biarti pamim rabos. He says, I would answer to that claim. Shelanias daiti endine hator klal v'hilchus Shabbos bifrat nikvam ayidei hamivchan hamada'i. Now, don't misunderstand. He writes here that hilchus Shabbos is not going to work based on what you see under the microscope. Now that doesn't mean that science doesn't play a role in halacha. Right? Is that what it means? Obviously it's not what it means. It doesn't mean science doesn't play a role. Science does play a role. But when we're talking about Hilchos Shabbos, how far do we go? What are we going to say? To figure out, let's say somebody thinks they're violating Malach of Choresh, right? How do you violate Malach of Choresh? So the classic way to violate a Malach of Choresh is you go into the ground and you dig up something from the ground. That's real Choresh. But none of us ever do that. We're not farmers. We don't go outside. We don't do those things. So let's say Choresh with my shoe. Right? I have cleats. I'm wearing sneakers. And maybe it's kicking up some of the ground as I walk. Okay. Now, how would you determine whether or not someone is violating Malach of Choresh? Do you have to go with a microscope and check whether or not a minuscule amount of dirt is coming up when I walk? Of course not. The question is, does a normal person, when they see you walking, are they able to see dirt kicking up from the ground or not? That's the way we determine whether or not you violate Choresh or not. So Rav Reuben argued, I got the scientists down here, we checked out under the microscope, and we came to the conclusion that when you use the wipe, there is something that's coming out. And therefore, he says, it's a malach of schita. And the argument back, the counter argument was, that's not the way we determine a malacha. It doesn't mean we don't believe in science. It means, lo nidna Torah malachei asharis. The Torah does not expect us to do everything in our lives with microscopes. It's the same discussion the Achronim have when we come to checking an esrog, right? Sometimes you go to the shuk in Mei Sharm and you see people sitting there with the loop, sitting there with the checker, with the microscope, seeing how what it is. Meikra, then you're not mechuyev to do that. Bugs in the water, same thing. Many examples, yeah.
There's really no halachic shaila here at all. Everybody agrees with schita. There's questions with seers. How absorbent is the wipe?
That's what he's arguing. That's exactly his point. There's no shaila here. That's what he's arguing. So Rav Reuben pushed back, yeah? Yeah, tefillin the ribua. So it's interesting. Tefillin have to be, it's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, that tefillin need to be exactly square. So what does it mean exactly square? To most of us, our tefillin looks square, so it's good enough. My father had somebody who came to his shiur on Tuesday evenings. He gives a shiur in Queens. And he said that there was a dentist who came to his shiur, who does, I don't know if he does fillings, or, I don't know, a regular dentist is able to see this, or only a big mumche, I'm not sure exactly. But he had some kind of dentist who came to his shiur, who said, I just want you to know that I know squares much more efficiently than everybody else, because I deal with people's teeth, and I deal with precision, and I can see things. In 1 second, I can look at something and see if it's really straight or it's not. He said, I come to shul every morning, I go out of my mind. I see people's tefillin, and they're not a ribua. So it looks like a ribua to most regular people, but to me, I know that it's not a square. So he wanted to know, am I mechuyev to go and tell the person you need to get your tefillin checked because it's not square? So my father said, no, if the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim is your tefillin have to be square, do you think Moshe Rabbeinu expected that we're all going to go every day with a microscope and hold the tefillin underneath the microscope and check whether or not it's exactly symmetrical, it's exactly the way a square is supposed to be, or no? It means that the tefillin have to be a ribua based on Rov Bnei Adam, based on the way most people perceive this. I seem to remember the Sholem Eishiv, maybe I'm making a mistake, but one of the Gedolim in that generation, they came up with these kinds of questions. They got some kind of shaila that you had. Was that right when the printing press was created? I'm not sure. Maybe. Was it a little bit after the printing press? Maybe that's why they were excited about this shaila. I don't know. I don't remember exactly why. But they say they had a very, very tiny thing that was printed. They printed a chumash that had such tiny letters you couldn't read it. Why'd they print it? I don't know. I don't know if it was that people can hide it and then use a magnifying glass to read from it, or people thought it was a skula. I'm not sure exactly. Sometimes you see Sephardim have these kinds of things. You can't read the Tehillim that they carry around, but they carry it around for a skula or something. I don't remember exactly what the reason was, but the shaila was, would there be a problem of Bizayon Kisvei HaKodesh when it's Kisvei HaKodesh that you can't even read? Without a magnifying glass, you couldn't read the words. So is that considered like this is Kisvei HaKodesh, or do you say no? Lo nitna Torah Malachei Asharis works in that direction as well. The same way the Ribua Tefillin is kosher without a magnifying glass, and the same way all these other cases, the Esrog is okay without the magnifying glass. Maybe we should say, if you have Kisvei HaKodesh and you need a magnifying glass to be able to see what's written there, maybe that's not called Kisvei HaKodesh. Maybe you're allowed to throw it in the garbage. Maybe you're allowed to bring it into the bathroom. There's no din Kisvei HaKodesh at all. So it's an interesting issue. Now let's look at the... Yeah. Yeah, that is the question.
So then why wouldn't you want to know what actually is happening?
Of course you would want to know.
But you just said you want to know
Of course you would want to know. The question is, how far do we need to go with our understanding? Does it mean we go with a microscope? That's how far we go? No, that's not the answer. Because the same thing with the tefillin. Either the tefillin are square or they're not. The answer is they're not square, but it's square enough. Right? So the dentist will look at it and say, no, these aren't square. But we don't care what the dentist says because we normally do care what the dentist says. In this case, we don't take the dentist's word seriously. Why? Because he sees things differently than most regular people see it. Because of his area of expertise, he's able to see a fine detail that most of us are not able to see. Right. He must be a very special person. I don't know. Yeah. Right. So cleaning a wipe against the beged would be a problem regardless, because whether it's absorbed inside or not, we already spoke about what the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch say, taking water from a sink that's not on anything. Let's say I take water with my hands. My hands are non-absorbent. I take water with my hands and I put the water onto my clothing. That's already a problem of potential libun, schita, problems like that. So that we already discussed with the other issue. But here the question is, you're doing it on somebody's skin, which is also non-absorbent. So what is the status of that? So now we get to the other issue, and that is, what do you do with the problem of somebody who has a psak from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach very clearly, and then all of a sudden somebody else comes along and says that they heard from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach otherwise? So now let's turn to the second side of the page. Hinektir keser rosha v'mechtavo. He writes directly to Rabbi Reuben, the Archos Shabbos, and he says, you wrote in your letter, you wrote an accounting of what happened when you had a private conversation with Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about this issue. V'kasev, and you wrote, Shashama miyedid karov, Shahagon Rabbi Shlomo Zalman chazer ba mehetero, lehishtamish b'megvonim elu. You claim that Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was chazer, that he retracted from his original heter, v'hor lo le'iser, u'kvar kasev kem baruch ha-Shabbos. And therefore, in your Sefer Archa Shabbos, on Hilchas Shabbos, you wrote, Shashama me'anashim, that you heard from many others, Shagun Rav Shlomo Zalman b'sof yamav chazerbot. When Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach got older, he retracted his original opinion that he had told the Shmira Shabbos Gechasa when the Sefer was written. Ach tamea ani, I cannot accept that. Im achin chazerbo hagun Rav Shlomo Zalman mimashi hitir, if Rav Shlomo Zalman in fact believed that his position now changed, it would have been the obligation of a responsible posig with the shoulders of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who knows that people are following his opinion, it would have been his primary obligation to go out in public, publish his opinion, and let everybody know with certainty that this is what he feels. Lohodia kabel am va'eda b'ksav yodo uvishmo, but if Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach did not do that, you can't claim that you had a private conversation with him and he agreed to your position. Can't be. What? Like the bicycle? Yes, the bicycle. The Svardashu Gedolim had the same achlokas about the bicycle. Should we assume that they were chozer or not? And that's really what I want to get to here. So he writes over here that the Chazon Ish spoke about this when he was thinking about the story of the Tshuva Me'ava and the Noda Bihuda. What's the story of the Tshuva Me'ava and the Noda Bihuda? Noda Bihuda was one of the great Gedolim in Prague in the 1700s. And the problem is, Rabbi Cheska Landau, the Noda Bihuda, had an issue. Because we know the Gemara says that we have all kinds of shiurim that the Torah gives. So we know you have a Kezias, you have a Kebetza, you have a Kakoseves, all kinds of different shiurim. Now, number one, the Gaonim write in the Tshuva Sagaonim. Why is it? It's so strange. When we have measurements, why did Chazal give measurements of an egg, of a finger, of a thumb, of a pinky, of a toe? Why do they do that? Why don't they give normal, standard measurements? Why do they do this? So the Gaonim say the answer is because an egg is always going to be an egg. A date is always going to be available. And a finger is always going to be a finger. So therefore, they thought that was the easiest way to let everybody know what the measurements were. They didn't have a ruler. They didn't have centimeters and millimeters like we have today. So therefore, they said the easiest way to let everybody understand exactly what the Shiurei Torah are is by telling them, sometimes you need a date, sometimes you need an olive, sometimes you need an egg, and sometimes you need a finger, a thumb, a pinky, a toe, and that's the way that you understand exactly how the measurements go. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda was going along with this his whole life, and that's the way he led his life, and then he says one day in the Beis Medrash, you know, let's do an experiment. Let's try to figure out, does this really equal, does it really add up, does it really make sense? And he made a whole calculation, mathematical calculation, and he puts his fingers and his toes and his pinkies into the equation, and he's trying to figure it out, and he says, this doesn't match up, it doesn't make sense. It can't be. And he didn't know what to do, and he said, therefore it must be, the Rabbi Yehuda in the 1700s says, it must be that niskatnu ashiurim, something changed along the way, either we got bigger, or the eggs got smaller, something happened, but it doesn't make any sense. The calculation doesn't add up. Okay, so what do you do with that? So the Stipler Gaon, right, the Stipler has in one of his letters, in the Sefer Shiurin Shel Torah, where he deals with a lot of the issues about Shiurin. So he says, well, what do we do with this? And we have another issue, says the Stipler. There are many, many things that the Rambam lists as being a number of trefos that would invalidate an animal. It would say that if you have this kind of illness in an animal, the animal's a trefa, because it's impossible for an animal to live 12 months with this kind of illness. So therefore, it's deemed a trefa. And you can't eat it. Says the Stipler, we know based on science today, it's not the case. We have many problems in the animal's internal organs that are described in the Rambam, and we see today that it's just not true that an animal, we do an experiment, leave the animal, take a CAT scan, look at the problem, watch it over the course of a year, over 2 years, over 3 years, and the animal will survive. So what do we do with that? So the Stipler says we have all these kinds of problems and contradictions, and we have to draw the line somewhere. The way we draw the line is whatever Chazal said is what it is. It doesn't match up mathematically, it doesn't match up physically, it's not true. You take a CAT scan, you see it's not the case. It doesn't matter. Stipler said, this is what it is. If that's what Chazal said, if these are the trefos, if these are the shiurim, if these are the beitza, if these are the fingers, that's what we do and we don't change it. That was the approach of the Stipler. There were others, including the Vilna Gaon and Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Chasam Sofer and many other great Gedolim who were from a very different school of thought who felt, no, if science shows us otherwise with regard to the shiurim, maybe we have to reconsider. Maybe we had it all wrong. Maybe something changed. Maybe nishtanu atvayim. Maybe we don't know why, but maybe something may have changed, which will make us now have to reevaluate and reconsider everything. So this was a major debate. Now the reason why it's very complicated is because over here, Rabbi Lezer Fleklish was the Talmud Muvak of the Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda lived in the 1700s. Rabbi Lezer Fleklish was his Talmud Muvak who lived into the 1800s. And he says, one, don't give me stories. He says, I was there when the Rabbi Yehuda did this experiment. I was there when the Rabbi Yehuda was measuring his fingers with the beitza, with the kezayis, with the everything. And I watched what happened. And he says the following story. Listen to what he says. He says, my Rebbe was mishichva umayla gavoh me'al kol gavoyim. The Rabbi Yehuda was such a gadol. He was mishichva lemayla gavoh me'al kol gavoyim. He was head and shoulders above everyone in the generation. Now, what did he mean? He meant that as a euphemism in both directions. He meant the Rabbi Yehuda was a towering giant in Torah, and there was nobody who could surpass the godless of the Rabbi Yehuda. But he also meant the Rabbi Yehuda happened to be 6.5 feet tall. So he says it was not a foolproof experiment, because my Rebbe, the Rabbi Yehuda, had fingers that were twice as long as most regular people. Most people I know, he says, were half the height. Not half, but much shorter than the Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore he says, since my Rebbe was a gadol b'Yisrael, not only was he a gadol in his brain, he was a gadol in his physical appearance as well. And therefore Rabbi Lezer Fleklish says, I don't want to hear the dispute. I was there in the Beis Medrash. I was there when they made the experiment, and it's not a foolproof experiment. Because the Rabbi Yehuda had very different size hands than everybody else. And therefore he says, he went to the Rabbi Yehuda the next day in the shir, and he said, I saw what you wrote, I saw the conclusion that you came to, and I'm sorry to tell you, he says, you're a big Adam Gadol. He didn't know how to say it in a respectful way, so he said, you're a major Adam Gadol, you're bigger than everybody else. And he assumed that the Rabbi Yehuda would get his pun, would understand his joke, And he writes the following. I think this is the most controversial smile that anybody ever made in their life. He says that Rabbi Yehuda shook his head, v'sachak, and he laughed. So Rabbi Yehuda laughed. So what does it mean he laughed? This is a major machlokes acharonim. How do you interpret the laugh of the Rabbi Yehuda? So it sounds silly, but it's major consequences la'alacha. How much matzah do I need to eat to be mekayim the mitzvah on Pesach? How much mar do I need to eat? How much bread do I need to eat to make a berachas hamazon? Everything. It's relevant to everything, all the Shiurei Torah. So, Rabbi Lezer Fleklish writes, the Rabbi Yehuda wrote his tshuva. I came the next day and I told him this kind of pun. Rabbi Yehuda smiled. And the question is, what does the smile mean? So that's a major issue. The Ma'ari Asad, one of the great Gedolim in Hungary, he passed away in the mid-1800s, came onto the scene right as this whole issue was brewing. And the Ma'ari Asad writes, listen, Hagon Tshuva Me'ava Hisiga Rabo Hanoi Yehuda Bazeh. We already know that the Tshuva Me'ava, Rabbi Lezer Fleklish, went to his Rebbe the next day and told him this doesn't make sense. V'hizvakeach imo b'fanam, and he disagreed and he argued with the Rebbe. Ad asher nana l'rosho v'sachak, and the Rabbi Yehuda smiled and he laughed. Nira kohodolo. Obviously the smile means that he agreed with him. Obviously the smile means that I made a mistake, and it's really not, wasn't a full experiment. It wasn't the way an experiment's supposed to be done. So okay, so the Rabbi Yehuda was wrong. That's the conclusion that the Ma'ari Asad comes to. And the Chazon Ish comes along and he says, what are you talking about? That's the way you interpret a laugh? You know, my father Shir, you have to be in the Shir long enough to know, when you ask him a question and he says, I don't know. He says, I don't know all the time. So the different Talmidim have picked up, when he says, I don't know, doesn't mean you're asking the stupidest question ever, I'm not going to answer it, so I'm just going to say, I don't know. Or does I don't know mean like, it's really a good question, and I don't know the answer. So you have to know. When he says, I don't know, means this. When he says, I don't know, means that. So it depends how you have to know the Rebbe well enough to know which intonation he has when he says, I don't know. This is a big machlokas in YU. You know, so the young guys that come to YU, 19 years old, I remember a guy came over to me one day, he just came back from Shalavim, and he was all excited. He came over to my father, he asked him a kasha on the Mishnah Berurah. He says, I just stumped of Shechter, said, I don't know. I'm like, stick around long enough, you'll understand what the different I don't knows are all about, and you'll see. And someday you'll be a Talmud Chacham, and you'll understand that he didn't really not know. He just didn't want to tell you that if you read the next line in the Mishnah Berurah, you'll see why you're wrong. He just didn't want to point it out to you. Anyway, so the Chazon Ish in the 1900s picks up on the same issue, and he says, what are you talking about? The Rabbi Yehuda wrote something in a tshuva. He did an experiment. He wrote it down. He wrote his position for all eternity, for all posterity. You think if the Talmud of the Rabbi Yehuda came along and slugged up his Rebbe and told him that the experiment wasn't foolproof and it was wrong and he made a mistake, you think the Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't have had enough intellectual honesty to stand up and say, whatever it is that I wrote in my tshuva was wrong? So the Chazon Ish says, the tshuva me'av was out of his mind. The Rebbe was laughing at you because you're a fool. The Rebbe was laughing at you because you think he didn't take it into account when he did the experiment? Of course he did. And when the Rebbe smiled at you, that wasn't a smile because he agreed. It's a smile because he was laughing at you, not with you. It's exactly what the Chazon Ish writes. He then goes so far and he says, Ein roi lahaviyam lebeis medrash. This is petumei mili. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. Who would ever quote this tshuva me'ava? It's so insane. It doesn't make any sense. The Rebbe Yehuda did something. He obviously knew what he was doing, and if he didn't know what he was doing and the Talmud pointed it out to him, we have to believe that the Rabbi Yehuda would have taken responsibility and would have written to the world that he made a major mistake. So this is something that Rav Asher Weiss draws on. He doesn't give the whole background, but it's part of what he draws on, and he says, I believe the same thing when it comes to all Piskei Halacha. If Rav Moshe wrote something in the Igros Moshe, and he didn't say later on in his life that he retracted what he wrote, we have every right to believe that that's where Rav Moshe felt. Ah, you have a Talmud who comes along later and says, oh, I heard Rav Moshe once told me Baal Peh, I was talking to him in his living room, in his dining room, and he told me this, and he smiled, and he laughed, and he joked. That doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. If the written word is there, we follow the written word. And that's what he says, the same thing over here when it comes to this issue of the wipes. If Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach allowed the Shmirah Shabbos Kilchasa to write for all of Klal Yisrael that baby wipes are permissible on Shabbos, and later on in his life he felt that he should retract the psak because it was a mistake, then Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's primary responsibility is to write in one of his tshuvas somewhere on record that he retracts his original psak, and nobody should follow what he told Rav Neuwirth many, many years ago. But he never did that. And therefore he believes that that would mean, it would come to the conclusion that anyone who feels otherwise should be ignored. As great a Talmud Chacham as they might be, as much as they say that they had a conversation with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, maybe you got him on the wrong day. But maybe it wasn't Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's proper opinion, because if it was, he certainly would have publicized it. He was intellectually honest enough that he would have certainly done that in order to teach Klal Yisrael the right way to go. So I just thought this was a fascinating, not just for the halacha that we're discussing here, I think it's just a fascinating issue in general. It comes up all the time where people quote things in the name, and it's not really coherent because it doesn't really fit with what the printed word is. And the question is, how do we deal with that? The Chazon Ish had a very firm opinion. This comes up in another case. I see we're over time. Comes up in another case when we talk about there is a psak of the Rush, and that is any bracha that's not mentioned in Chazal should not be recited. So he gives a number of examples. One of the brachas that we say every morning in Berachas HaShachar is Handose Nayaif Ka. If you look through Chazal, you don't find it anywhere. So the Beis Yosef writes that the minig is that we don't say it. Svardim don't say it. Why? The Beis Yosef says because you look through Chazal and you don't find it anywhere. Why do the other Achronim say that we should say it? What's the rationale? The Rush says we don't say a bracha Shalah Huzka V'Talmud. So the answer is because the way my father always told it to us in Shir was that the Gemara is not a sitter. The Gemara is a Gemara. And the Gemara didn't have to write every tefillah, every bracha. Just because a tefillah is not found in the Gemara doesn't necessarily mean they didn't say it in the times of the Gemara. The Gemara is not a sitter. Okay, so that's the argument. So the Beis Yosef writes not to say it. Later on, along comes one of the Svardish Achronim, I think it's the Knesset HaGedola, and he says, no, it's a mistake. There was a Talmud Chacham who I met, who once told me that he had a private conversation with the Beis Yosef in the 1500s, and the Beis Yosef told him that even though he writes in the Beis Yosef that you shouldn't say Anos and Le'av Koach, he changed his mind. He changed his mind because Anos and Le'av Koach is such a beautiful bracha, and obviously he said that we should say it today, because the Arizal quotes in the Kabbalim that it's a wonderful thing to say, and therefore he writes that the Beis Yosef changed his mind, and all the Sfardim should change their opinion as well, and we should all make the bracha of Anos and Le'av Koach. So what do we do with that Knesset HaGedolah? Knesset HaGedolah was a very worthwhile source. He is a very credible source, a very honest and trustworthy person. But on the other hand, what we have is what the Beis Yosef writes. The Beis Yosef says, we don't say Anos and Le'av Koach. So what do you do with that? We have a steer on the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef writes on record that we shouldn't do something. We have people who mipia shmua tell us something else. So do we listen to that shmua, or do we follow what the Beis Yosef wrote? And the argument that is made against it, the Chidah and other Achronim say, if the Beis Yosef really felt that way, he would have written it. He was very responsible. He would have written that. But he didn't write it anywhere. And if he didn't write it anywhere, it means we should go with the written word. We should go with the bottom line that the Beis Yosef himself wrote. And we should ignore any Shmua that says otherwise. So this again, these are just two examples, but there are so many like this. And it's a very, very interesting topic as you go through, as you navigate halacha, you'll see it comes up fairly often, fairly frequently. And it's a major question that we have to think about, how we deal with something that's mipia Shmua, that goes against that which is the written word itself. Okay, Mirtz Hashem.